Well, here in the U.S., President Obama delivers his farewell address tonight, a long tradition that dates back to the country's founding. Here now's Alex Ashlock reports on an event that's part of the transfer of power.
President Obama has already said one goodbye. He spoke at the farewell ceremony held for him by the U.S. military last week.
Of all the privileges of this office, and there are many, I will miss Air Force One, I will miss Marine One. But I can stand before you today and say that there has been no greater privilege and no greater honor than serving as the Commander-in-Chief of the greatest military in the history of the world.
Obama leaves office as the only Commander-in-Chief to complete two full terms with the country at war. So it wouldn't be a surprise if he reflected on that tonight. But some past presidents we associate with war didn't get that chance. Abraham Lincoln was assassinated only days after the South surrendered, ending the Civil War in 1865, and Franklin Roosevelt died in 1945, before the end of World War II. Vice President Harry Truman succeeded FDR, and he made the decision to drop atomic bombs on Nagasaki and Hiroshima, triggering Japan's surrender. Truman bid farewell in 1953, during another war, this one in Korea.
I suppose that history will remember my term in office as the years when the Cold War began to overshadow our lives. I have had hardly a day in office that has not been dominated by this all-embracing struggle, this conflict between those who love freedom and those who would lead the world back into slavery and darkness.
In his farewell, Truman did something most outgoing presidents do. He wished his successor well and urged Americans to support him. Dwight Eisenhower followed Truman into the White House. He was a five-star general who helped plan the D-Day invasion. But as president, when he left office, he did so with this warning.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
Eisenhower spoke on January 17, 1961. 3 days later, John F. Kennedy was inaugurated. His presidency ended with his assassination in Dallas in 1963, and his vice president, Lyndon Johnson, took office. Johnson's presidency saw historic progress on issues like civil rights, but dogged by Vietnam, he decided not to run for re-election in 1968. So he used the 1969 State of the Union message to say goodbye.
I hope it may be said 100 years from now that by working together, we help to make our country more just for all of its people, as well as to ensure and guarantee the blessings of liberty for all of our posterity. That's what I hope. But I believe that at least it will be said that we tried.
Richard Nixon followed LBJ into the White House, but his presidency ended in the Watergate scandal. His emotional farewell to members of his administration and the White House staff was impromptu and was forced by his resignation.
You are here to say goodbye to us, and we don't have a good word for it in English. The best is au revoir. We'll see you again.
Richard Nixon on August 9, 1974. In more recent years, these farewell addresses have reflected the tenor of changing times. After his two terms in January 2001, Bill Clinton described his hopes for the future.
We must remember that America cannot lead in the world unless here at home we weave the threads of our coat of many colors into the fabric of one America. As we become ever more diverse, we must work harder to unite around our common values and our common humanity. We must work harder to overcome our differences in our hearts and in our laws. We must treat all our people with fairness and dignity, regardless of their race, religion, gender, or sexual orientation, and regardless of when they arrived in our country, always moving toward the more perfect union of our founders' dreams.
8 months later, with George W. Bush as president, the 9/11 attacks rocked the nation and affected everything after. Bush launched the invasion of Afghanistan and later the war in Iraq. He delivered his farewell address on January 9, 2009.
I've often spoken to you about good and evil, and this has made some uncomfortable. But good and evil are present in this world, and between the two, there can be no compromise. Murdering the innocent to advance an ideology is wrong every time, everywhere. Freeing people from oppression and despair is eternally right. This nation must continue to speak out for justice and truth. We must always be willing to act in their defense and to advance the cause of peace.
There are echoes of the very first presidential goodbye in all of these speeches. George Washington's farewell in 1796 was a gesture of humility. The man who could have been king said the people should choose their next leader. He would not seek a third term. Washington also warned of the dangers of partisanship and the influence of alliances with foreign powers. Washington's words continue to resonate literally.
I rejoice that the state of your concerns, external as well as internal, no longer renders the pursuit of inclination incompatible with the sentiment of duty or propriety, and am persuaded, whatever partiality may be retained for my services, that in the present circumstances of our country, you will not disapprove my determination to retire.
Every year, typically in February, a member of the U.S. Senate reads Washington's farewell text aloud on the Senate floor. Senator Chris Coons read his farewell address last year. It's a tradition that started during the Civil War in 1862. For Here and Now, I'm Alex Ashlock.